So I've entitled my reflection as Confessions from a Reluctant Introvert, Lessons from the UU Prophetic Imperative. I arrived in Colorado in 1975 to begin a job at the University of Denver in the Department of Speech Pathology and Audiology with a specialty in services for children and adults who are deaf and hard of hearing. I'd always wanted to be a teacher since I was very young. And as a young child, I had tutored two young hard-of-hearing boys who attended the John Tracy Clinic. Their mother was hard of hearing, and she attended our Catholic Church community. As a young woman, my very first really serious relationship was with a hearing child of deaf parents from Alabama. And thinking that we would be married, I moved to Alabama and lived for a while with his deaf parents before starting school at the University of Alabama. They lived in Talladega, where the State School for the Deaf and Blind was located. The father was a chef, and the mother was a residence assistant. Neither of them had the education of a high school diploma. But they taught me American Sign Language, and during that summer, they took care of a little girl who had a little deaf child who had no family to go to, no language. And I watched and learned how they taught her to communicate. They impacted my life in a way that they will never know. At that time, deaf children in America were often identified late, at 4 or 5 years of age, and they typically spent the rest of their lives either in self-contained special education classrooms or in residential schools, on average leaving school with a third to fourth grade reading level and language skills that were about 50% of their chronological age. So when I arrived in Colorado in 75, there was actually no money for early education, very little in public health. But the University of Denver had recently completed a federal grant to establish a pilot program training parents with children who were birthed through 3 years of age in Colorado and their families. And the Colorado Department of Health had established a small statewide program when the grant was completed in 1973, and I arrived only a few years after that. With no money, but a lot of youth and passion, we decided to set up a statewide network that would reach every home of every identified infant and toddler in the state of Colorado. And we went into each community to try to identify someone who was willing to be trained, despite the fact that they may not have a child who was deaf in their community, and we hadn't identified a means to pay them if we did find an identified child. But we did identify volunteers from each community in Colorado. We wanted someone trained within an hour of every home in the state. And they came for training. The state paid for that training 4 times a year in Denver. Although some waited years before we identified a child, they kept coming to the trainings. In the early years, we would contact families with a trained individual and connect them. And we would try to find funding from the school district, from the health department, from developmental disabilities, or nonprofit agencies to pay for the services. Sometimes we succeeded and sometimes we failed. So sometimes when there was no money, our families and providers used to barter to pay for the services. One woman cleaned the house of the early intervention provider to pay for the services. Another provided automotive services. And on the Indian reservation, one family provided lamb each year when they slaughtered their sheep. I did not know at the time that this would one day become the most socialized system in the world for providing services to families who had children who were deaf and hard of hearing. I met Wayne and married him in 1983 and was introduced to Unitarianism. I'd been raised a Catholic and had raised my daughter from a previous marriage in the Catholic Church. And although I didn't have the words prophetic imperative, I was introduced to the UU charge to better humanity. As I tell this story, keep in mind that I was, as a child, really an introvert. As a young child, I was terrified to be in school plays, and I have this memory of standing on stage as a fifth grader with tears streaming down my face for the whole, I don't know how long it was, hour, 2 hours, because I was so afraid of being placed in that situation. So fate has a way of propelling you into things that you don't actually plan to do. In the early 1990s, I was contacted by National Institutes of Health and asked if I could prove with my data that screening hearing of newborns would result in better developmental outcomes. And we were able to demonstrate that in the state of Colorado, children who had been screened and placed early into intervention maintained age-appropriate language levels, at least for the first 5 years of life. And that began the roller coaster that has been my life. I was called to Washington to address policymakers. I was asked to convince the Academy of Pediatrics to support an initiative to establish newborn hearing across the United States. But the catch was we had to pass legislation in all 50 states and all the territories because there was no hope of national legislation. We decided that the only way to do this was to build a system with equal partnerships between the parents of deaf children, deaf and hard of hearing individuals, and professionals. And that meant that we had to stop the 400 to 500 year war between oralism and sign language, which we actually did successfully in the state of Colorado, sadly not across the United States. We decided that each of these groups must be part of a public system paid by a public system for their contributions. But we ran into problems because some of the parents and deaf people who were participating didn't have high school diplomas, and the state required that public employees had to at least have a high school diploma. Fortunately, we were assisted by a movement within the Spanish-speaking community where the health department wished to hire cultural brokers, some of whom did not have the equivalent of a high school diploma. And we actually changed the legislation and the procedures in the state to get these people hired. We had no money to buy equipment, but we mobilized communities, and one community in rural Colorado convinced their local McDonald's to donate money from French fry sales until they raised sufficient funds to buy the hospital the hearing screening equipment. So we received a second grant from Maternal Child Health to teach other people how we did it in Colorado. And within a four-year period of time, we went from three states with legislation to 33 states. We had reached a tipping point. We simply taught other states how we did it. We had a list of questions and answers for the legislators. We contacted every family with a deaf child, the deaf community, and all professionals with information about their local legislation and a plea for them to contact personally their legislators with requests to support the bill. We've passed every piece of legislation that we've ever introduced with bipartisan support. And while it was spreading like wildfire throughout the United States, now 4 million babies every year are screened for hearing. It was also spreading across the world. First, the English-speaking world in the United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, and then Europe. And from there, it spread to Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Russia, Asia, Africa, and South America. We demonstrated that a simple program of one home visit per week that costs $2,500 per child per year succeeded with parents no matter what level of education that they had. Our families with low education, low economic resources had children who were sometimes doing as well as our children with parents who were doctors, lawyers, and other professionals. Our Spanish-speaking deaf children were doing better than Spanish-speaking children with no disabilities. Our children who were deaf with autism were being mainstreamed successfully into their local kindergartens. And so now, experts in autism want to know how we developed our system and why we have what we have. And our parent support groups for all disabilities are asking us how we did it. Head Start programs are asking for support to improve their outcomes. Instead of $2,500 per child per year, they spend about $15,000 per child per year with sadly not outcomes that they can be proud of. Today, as an introvert, I'm sometimes asked to speak before audiences of thousands of people, and they can be all over the world. Programs in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya, Nigeria, in Iran, Turkey, Russia, and China all want to develop programs for their children who are deaf and hard of hearing. Sometimes we tell them what we did, the power of parents and the power of people with disabilities, and they laugh, because in their culture they have no rights and no power. And yet I have watched them learn to cooperate with government agencies, professionals, and seen how they changed their system. I once asked in South Africa why they were actually even doing this, because they had so many other health problems. People were dying of AIDS. They had no electricity in every home. They didn't have clean water. And one of the things that they said to us is, we need a health program that we can actually accomplish. Everyone needs hope. And they loved the stories about how we had no money, and that in a country like the United States, we relied upon barter in some communities to make it possible, because you can do that anywhere in the world. The formula was simple: establish trust relationships, communicate without judgment, listen, join in partnership with people with disabilities, with parents and professionals. Find common ground, what you all can agree upon, and build from there. And this July, there was a big conference in Denver, a large professional conference for people who educate deaf children and their families. And several young deaf adults presented. One had been a contestant on the Survivors. One had been a contestant on the American Gladiators. And one had actually been a singer on The Voice. One had a law degree. Many had graduated from college. A generation ago, this would never have happened. Today, many residential schools for the deaf have closed because of lack of children, and so have self-contained programs in our local public schools. Almost all of our children are now educated in regular classrooms, and an increasing number are no longer receiving any special education services. We were at the center of a perfect storm, where everything that was needed for success came together. Federal laws were passed to provide states with funding for their programs, technology advanced for hearing aids and cochlear implants, and with every success, the field was filled with hope. I had to find my niche, a place where I had the skills and knowledge to make a difference, to combat poverty and discrimination, to improve educational opportunities. I started with what I knew, how to educate parents to communicate with their children. And that has taken me to the World Health Education Organization and to educational initiatives for Head Start programs across the United States. I don't think I had the courage or personality to make a difference in the world. Unitarianism helped me to see that focusing on systems could bring justice to this small part of humanity. Sometimes the situation, the time, the issue calls to you, and you reluctantly get pushed to the center of the storm. But you may have an ability to make the difference. Somehow, the momentum of the community of support pushed me onward. Not every state or country has been able to replicate our results in Colorado, because many of them are focused on technology, not on people. Today, we have one of the only statewide programs in any disability offered free to every family in the state, with a quality assurance that what you receive in the most remote corner of our state is as of high quality as anywhere else in the state. The deaf family in Los Angeles, the deaf family in Alabama, may never know how they impacted the world of deafness. I leave you with this parting thought. Be intentional, change systems. Think about what legacy you will leave on this earth. What would the world be like without you in it?